29.
Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly.
Greetings.
We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
You may have noticed Kelly's voice is quite what it usually is. She's not feeling too well.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk that much.
And that's okay, because we'll let her rest during the holiday. It'll be nice. We'll get you some good rest and you'll feel better, I hope. So, who do we have today?
We have a Google Voice message from Mike in Oregon. And we have somebody from YouTube whose YouTube name is Green Day Fan. And we have Tony in New York. And then we have a couple of things to talk about.
Yep, some fishy updates for the week.
Yeah.
Okay, so first we have Mike in Oregon. And since nobody complained last time when we just played it over the speaker, we're going to assume that it worked okay. So here we go. We're going to play it right off the speaker live, so to speak, live for us, in that we're hearing it actually. Okay.
It's coming.
I hope it's coming. Let me try that again.
Hey, where I'm at. This is Mike from Oregon again. Hey, I had a quick question to run by you. Also a little update on my 125-gallon cichlid tank. As things stand right now, I've got two of the electric yellow cichlids and then two peacock cichlids in the tank, and they're cohabitating beautifully together. No aggression to speak of. Everybody really gets along well. As a matter of fact, I hear all these horror stories about how aggressive cichlids are. So far, I've yet to see any aggression out of anybody. They're very well-behaved fish. So, with that being said, though, the one thing that I have encountered is they seem to be very shy. If someone walks into the room, they'll go hide in their rocks. And if you sit down on the couch and you're still, they'll come back out of their rocks and start swimming around and doing what fish do. But as soon as you move again, they go back into hiding. Anyway, I mean, having fish, it's nice to be able to see them. So I was kind of looking around on the internet, various cichlid forums, and a lot of people mentioned using something called dithered fish, in particular Australian rainbow fish, to actually bring the cichlids out, because the Australian rainbow fish, they're very active fish, and they're not shy, so they kind of have a calming effect on the cichlids, and so they feel more safe and secure, and they'll come out. So anyway, I was kind of wondering what you guys thought of that, if you had any experience or on these dither fish. They use typically either Australian rainbow fish or some sort of barb. Anyway, so once again, thanks for the show, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Well, thanks, Mike, for sending us that question in and doing it as a Google Voice message, which we always appreciate. Well, a couple things we can talk about there. One, yeah, the dither fish idea in general, first let me say that, is a pretty well-established idea in the hobby. And the idea being that shy fish can react to the presence of other fish as a kind of guarantee that there aren't predators out.
They see them out playing and thinking, oh, nothing bad is happening to them, I guess it's safe.
So it's probably safe for us to come out too. And I would say that in the specific case of the African cichlids, if you were to have more, and I know you're planning on adding more African cichlids to the tank over time, both in terms of purchasing and breeding, I think you'll find the need for dither fish decreases because other cichlids will act as dither fish. And the idea being kind of safety in numbers, they know that there are other out there of their own species or similar species. It doesn't really matter if they're another species or not. To some extent, they'll just see other fish out more often, and so they'll tend to come out more often. So I think as your tank becomes more populated, that's what you'll find. However, I have heard of people using various species as dither fish that are not African cichlids, and I have heard of using rainbow fish, in that because their water requirements aren't too different, and they like you said, they're not shy. They tend to be open, schooling in open water a lot. So it's not a bad idea. I wouldn't use dwarf neon rainbows for a couple of reasons. One, they might be a little bit too small, and another, they are especially prone to mycobacterium. So that is something that you might think about. But some of the larger Australian rainbows, you might try that. It's worth a go. I would say you'd want to get a big enough school so that they, first of all, they feel comfortable, and second of all, so that the cichlids don't feel like they can zero in on any one of them. If they do happen to feel aggression, it's better to have a school where they can, you know, it's like I said, it's harder for them to focus on one specific fish to pick on if there are, you know, 15 fish in the school than if there's just two or three. And that would probably be safer to do. And it would add beauty to your tank. Rainbow fish are beautiful fish. So, yeah, why not? There's always the possibility you're going to get some aggression, but, you know, there's little you can do about that except for just what I already said. So hopefully that helps. And as you find your cichlid population growing, you may find that you don't really need it anymore. And you can move those rainbow fish to another tank, or maybe just keep them there as long as... I mean, it is a big tank and there's a lot of space, so you probably have room for them for quite a number of years. And rainbow fish tend to be pretty long-lived, as long as they're healthy. So you could have them for quite a while. All right. I think that's about it for that. Those are my thoughts on that. Hopefully that helps. Thank you again, Mike.
Okay, Green Day fan from YouTube, and I'm assuming this comment is from the beta video?
Yeah. Our beta video, which I think we've mentioned before, was just kind of showing the growth process of our beta spawn that we did a couple years ago, and it was kind of just an idea. Oh, people might like this. We put this up on the website. It turned out it's now our most popular video on our website. It's up to almost 100,000 views itself. Just that video. It's close to that. It will be, it's like 94,000 something, I think, the last time I checked. So anyway, kind of funny how that works. But we get a lot of posts on it, and some of them are just things I can answer quickly on the website. But I thought this one, something that maybe a lot of Aquariumaxers might be interested in, so.
He says, or she, I don't know which one it is, how right. Can you make sure that the breeding is successful? I had a male beta a few years ago and had a female. I tried to breed them, but it didn't quite work, and a couple days later, the female died.
Well, you can never make 100% certain, because they're fish, and they have piscinalities, and things change, and not all fish are compatible, and so on. But you can do things to improve your odds. And so here are a few things. One, make sure the female's old enough. If you're buying your fish from a pet store, the females are not always quite ready to breed. Sometimes they sell them very young. And bettas can breed at surprisingly young ages. I'm not saying that's not the case, because it is. They 3 months old is plenty old enough to breed for a betta. So... but I've seen really, really young bettas in stores that are obviously not mature enough. It depends on how they've been fed and, you know, conditioned and so on. In fact, conditioning the male and female with live food for a week or so before you breed them is very helpful. We use Daphnia with ours, and that worked very well. We gave them a few Daphnia every day, along with other, you know, prepared foods, and that really helped get them into condition. I think we may have given them some amphipods too, I'm not sure. And one big thing, you know, these are not my own original ideas. I'm getting these from, even though I've used them, I'm not saying I came up with them. Our episode on betta breeding with Carlos, our interview that we did with him, it was very helpful in helping us have success with our betta breeding. So you might want to go back and find that episode. But one thing he suggested is keep the female in a container within the male's tank for about a week. And that's what we did. We had a cylinder of glass that we bought at a thrift store. It was probably about, 4 inches in diameter and maybe a foot tall. And we put it in the tank. So it was bottomless. It just was a cylinder. That's all it was.
And went down to the bottom of the tank.
Went down to the bottom so that there was the water could kind of seep and mix down at the bottom, but there was no place the fish could get out. And it was open up at the top so we could feed the fish, and there was, you know, air exchange and so on. Kind of like the idea of a hurricane lamp. A lot of betta breeders use hurricane lamps, but we saw this glass cylinder and said that that's even better because it gives her a little more space to swim around in, but it has the same benefits, which are basically that the female, the idea is that if you use a hurricane lamp or a cylinder of glass or something like that, the female's pheromones and the male's pheromones, they can communicate pheromonally. So if the female is releasing pheromones into the tank that communicate to the male, you know, and he can do that same to her, and so that her eggs will be ready when you put them together. So the water was mixing, but they're not actually touching each other, I guess is the idea. And some people just use a jar because seeing each other can often help trigger that too, but others say that the actual water, you want the same water, and that can be helpful. So we did that. That seemed to help. Another, make sure you provide cover for the female in the male's tank, because if the male's mad or she's not ready or something like that, can be a problem. So we used a flower pot on its side. We used some plastic plants bunched up and a big chunk of Java moss and things like that that she could hide under and around, swim behind. Also, don't release the female until the male has at least started a bubble nest, because if he hasn't started a nest, he's probably not ready. And he doesn't have to have finished it or made a great, huge, beautiful nest, but he has to at least have started one. Now, if the female is rotund with eggs, and if she's a dark color of betta, I mean, there's a lot of light-colored bettas out there, and this doesn't apply so much to them, but if she's fairly dark, it helps if she's got vertical bars along the sides of her belly. That's a sign of readiness. And a visible ovipositor, whatever color she is, down at the bottom, the white kind of dot that is the area where she's going to be releasing the eggs. It's usually white, at least. And ideally, if you see her orienting herself towards the male with her head down and shaking from side to side, that's a sign she's really ready to spawn. She's trying to get the male's attention. So if you notice at least several of those signs, and then you can release her into the tank and keep an eye on things. If they chase each other around a little bit, that's fine. But if he looks like he's trying to do her harm, then you can remove her and try again in a day or two. And it can often be a good idea to have several females, you know, two or three of them. And if one doesn't seem to be working out, take her out and then put another one in and try with that after having done all those same processes. Because sometimes fish just aren't compatible. And you can try another pairing and it works better. So hopefully that helps. If you are... You know, one thing that's important to think about when you're breeding bettas too, just as a kind of a side note, is that if you're breeding pet store bettas that are just like veil tails, the resale value is not going to be very high. So consider breeding.
They probably won't even take them.
Now, a lot of the times the pet stores won't take them. When we bred ours, they were, of course, bettas from the pet store, but they weren't just veil tails. We got a crown tail and a super delta. And we were careful about the colors to try to get some, you know, some good fry out of them. They weren't like show quality bettas, but they looked good enough because they weren't the veil tails that the pet stores were willing to take them. Not that veil tails aren't pretty, they are, but they just have more resale value when they're, you know, these were super delta comb tails and delta comb tails and probably some half moon comb tails. And those are not things you see every day in the store. And they have nice symmetrical tail development, so we were able to sell them more easily. So that's something to think about as well. Hopefully that helps.
Okay.
Thank you, Green Day from YouTube.
It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com. Or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Tony from New York.
Tony from New York.
He says, Happy Thanksgiving, Aquarimax.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Tony.
Yes.
And to all you who celebrate it. I know there's a lot of people in the world who don't celebrate it now or don't
but
celebrate
the same one. Being thankful is always a good thing, whether you have a holiday for it or not.
Exactly. So, thank you.
He says, yes, I am looking forward to adding some tanks to my basement in the near future. I am only in the beginning stages, in other words, reorganizing and making space. I am thinking about fish that would do well in lower temperatures, like white clouds or goldfish, and intend to run all the tanks through a sump, which I will heat in order to make up the difference. I like the idea of raising snails and even frying these tanks, but have not figured out how to do that and also keep an overflow in operation. I will also place a UV sterilizer in the sump in order to keep disease to a minimum. When it is finished, I am hoping to have 8 to 12 tanks. Although this will be a long-term project, I hope to get the drainage system in the first tank online sometime this coming year.
Wow, that's a cool project. For the fry, you might think of mutton mutton filters.
Mutton?
M-A-T-T-E-N. Mutton filters.
M-A-T-T-E-N.
Yeah, mutton, that might help with the fry. Probably not mutton. With a snail. No, not mutton filters.
I don't want to smell wet sheep in the fish room.
No, but that probably wouldn't help with the snails, but it might help with the fry, at least in some
what
cases.
What is it?
Well, we talked about it before in the podcast, but it's been a while. It's basically a big foam rectangular square that you put on one part of the tank, and you draw current through it, various ways to do that, but basically you draw water through it slowly, and it's like a giant sponge filter, but it's also
but the fry can't
blockage.
Get through.
Yeah. Okay. Sean in North Carolina had a kind of a similar arrangement to keep his fry on of his Celestial Pearl Daniels on one side of the tank. Anyway, that might be something to look into.
Okay.
With that. But that's cool. We hope to hear updates on the fish room.
This is another tidbit for your enjoyment. The Black Sea Devil has been recorded in action for the first time ever. Very spooky. Still, I feel like Jacques Cousteau being able to see something that most people have never been able to see before. Now you can too, and he sent the link. It's an angler fish.
Yeah, deep sea angler fish. There was, and it shows in the video. Thank you for sending that, by the way. It was fun.
Xander got a big kick out.
Yeah, our son Xander loves everything that lives in the deep sea, especially cephalopods, but anything. He loves viperfish and deep sea hatchetfish and anglerfish.
The scarier it is, the more he likes it.
He loves all of that stuff, and so he was very excited to see the video. And so were we. It was fun. I'd never seen a video of one, of course, and they are very bizarre. It shows a little clip of Finding Nemo and the artist's conception of one, and it is somewhat different, but it's still remarkably similar in some ways. It's got those huge fangs, and it's got the glowing little lure on the tip of the extension and everything that you can clearly see. So check that out. It is definitely funky.
We'll post the link.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and sorry. Yeah, he finishes up, all the best from the Northeast USA. I am thankful for Aquarimax.
Well, we're thankful for you and all of our listeners. So thank you very much. All right. So I think that is all of our, that's the list of our contributors for this week. We do have some things we want to share, too. We took a couple of jaunts to the pet store this past week. We went to one pet store that is about an hour away, I guess, 45 minutes, an hour away. And we hadn't been there in a while because we don't, you know, have a chance to go down there as much as we used to. We used to live near that pet store, and that was one of our pet stores we would frequent. But we were down there, and they had some really nice aquascapes set up. Amazing ones in the store. Some of them dry, and some of them that were for sale, and some of them were already, you know, planted and had water in them and growing. They had some plants using the dry start method up in the front near the window, a north-facing window. Thought that was a nice idea. They had some fun stuff in that store.
What's the dry start method?
The dry start method is a way to grow aquarium plants where, not dry like dry, but dry where you use a damp, you get the substrate damp, and then you keep the humidity high in the container, but
they're not underwater.
They're not underwater. They're just in damp substrate, and in some cases, the substrate itself is saturated with water, but the plant itself is sticking out. But the idea is you're taking advantage of atmospheric CO2 to get those plants started while keeping, you know, part of it dry keeps algae from growing while you're doing that. And then once your plants get a good start, then you add water and go from there.
They're already big enough to outcompete algae.
They can outcompete algae better and so on. So it's a good way to get them a boost. And they were doing that right in the store, which I thought was fun. There was something we saw that kind of disturbed us, though.
It was really weird, and we were wondering if you guys had seen them before.
Mm-hmm. I think we may have talked about them on the podcast before. I know we've talked about genetically modified fish, and you know how...
And yes, I'm sure you all know how I feel about that.
And about fish that have been dyed funny colors, like some of the... what do they do it with? They get the albino, or is it leucistic? I don't remember, but the black tetras, that the color variety of them that are essentially white, and then they will dye them blue or green or whatever.
What do they dye them with?
I don't know, but it looks kind of funky.
How do you dye a fish?
I don't do it, so I don't know. But what we saw...
At least they don't tie-dye them.
This was the first time we'd seen anything like this, and I know I've heard about it, and I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, but I've never seen one in real life, myself, before, that I recall. They were tattooed mollies.
They were white mollies, and it looked like, you know, a four-year-old had taken markers and drawn on them.
And they were little hearts, I think.
And polka dots.
Yeah.
Like, they drew a heart on each side, and then polka dots around it.
And the effect was not aesthetically pleasing, in my opinion.
I don't know, it looked like, you know, some little trendy toy that you'd have, like, fishy friends, you know, they'd call, and you carry them in your pocket. I don't know, like, they ought to come with a play set or something. It really did look like some little kid took markers and drew on the fish.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they got them like that.
I don't know what process they used to do that, but I didn't find it attractive, and I felt... It can't have been that comfortable for the fish. I don't know. I don't know what the process
really
is.
It looks really weird.
But it doesn't seem like that's very nice to the fish.
It just seems kind of silly to me when fish are already so naturally beautiful to...
Right. I mean, silver mollies can look really nice.
Yeah.
You don't need to color on them.
You don't need to make them a coloring page. Yeah, they're, you know, fish are not color by number.
No, it was a bit disturbing. I hope that's not a trend that will continue.
I don't know. We were wondering if you guys had ever seen them or what you thought of them.
Yeah, it just... I don't know. There you go. That was a bit disturbing. Something else disturbing happened this week, and this is later, and this is a different pet store that we ended up going to, but on Saturday, I was preparing to do our weekly water change with a python. Started hooking the python up to the sink. Got one of my sons to help me. We have the kids rotate, and they operate the drain and fill in the bathroom downstairs, and we hook up the two phones so that, like walkie-talkies, and I take the python to the different tanks, and I, you know, relay the messages. I say, okay, stand by. Okay, switch to fill. Okay, stand by. Standing by. Switch to drain. And we do that, and that's the best way we found to get it done without causing water explosions, which have happened in the past. So we've refined the system. Works pretty well. But as I was hooking it up, the venturi on the pump assembly that hooks up to the sink just broke right in half. Just boom. I don't know. There aren't very many parts of that python I haven't replaced over the years, at least once. It just, you know, it sees a lot of use. And so parts of it eventually break, and then we replace them. And you don't have to replace the whole thing, luckily, because it's quite modular. So I went down to the pet store. I had been tempted to go to the hardware store and get a waterbed pump, because you can get a waterbed pump that's essentially the same thing made by the same company, but a little cheaper. But I figured I'll just, you know, support the pet store. It's a mom-and-pop pet store, and I like them. They do a good job. So I figured I'd just, you know, eat the $3 more that it's going to cost and support them. So I did. Anyway, the thing had split, and so we went, and it cost about $12 to get the pump, which is a lot cheaper than buying a new python. But, so now this week I'll be able to change the water again. Looking forward to being able to do that. And while we were there, it was just Kelly and I were there, so we had kind of fun hanging around in the pet store for a little while we were there. And we got to look at some interesting things, didn't we? We also picked up a few things. We picked up some Amazon Frogbit and some Water Sprite. Because I'm afraid the balance in the 20-gallon in our room got kind of messed up when the light went out. When was that? A month or so ago. And the plants, some of the plants have done fine, like the crypts and the Anubias and the Java fern in there and so on. But the Rotala never quite bounced back as much as I was hoping it would. And so with that not doing as well as I'd like, I had noticed a little bit more algae growth than I'm comfortable with. So I got some Amazon Frogbit and some Water Sprite to help act as nutrient sponges and even block a little bit of the light and restore balance to the tank. I've done that before. And the last time I did it with Water Sprite, it worked. I mean, not Water Sprite. With Amazon Frogbit, it worked really well. But then I didn't have any large fish in the tank that would eat the amphipods. So the amphipods actually attacked the Water Sprite. I keep on saying Water Sprite. The Frogbit. The amphipods attacked the Frogbit and ate it. And then I put some more fish in, but it was too late. By the time I had got the fish in there, they had eaten every bit of Frogbit in it. I didn't have any left. So now I've got some gold barbs in there and some female bettas that we've had in there for a while, and they take care of the amphipods. There aren't any. So I put some more in there. And I like Amazon Frogbit anyway. It's kind of fun. Grows quickly. It's a good nutrient sponge. So we got some of that. But we saw a couple of things that you had a lot of fun with.
Yeah.
So let's talk about those.
We saw the scarlet baddis.
Yeah.
That I don't think I'd seen before, but I really liked them. They were very cute.
Yeah. And for those of you who may not know, they're very, very small fish. But they look a lot like a cichlid.
They do.
But a very tiny one.
They look like a teeny wee cichlid.
Like smaller than an inch long. And they're very colorful. They have like blue edges on their fins.
Right. Stripes and
bright kind of reddy orange stripes.
Yeah,
and the males do. The females aren't quite as colorful, but the they're really small, but they have very cichlid like appearance and very cichlid like personality. So
I don't know. They're almost like a nano cichlid.
Yeah, and so we're thinking that someday we might get some of those. I think, as I recall in the pet store, I only saw males.
I think there was one female.
Was there one?
Yeah, because you pointed it out saying, look, this is different. She looks different.
Oh, maybe we did see a female. Yeah, that's right. They're harder to find a lot of times in the store with the females. But if we could get a pair of those, I think that'd be fun sometime.
Really?
Just put it in a planted tank. I bet they would do well with amphipods. I don't know if they could tackle a full-grown adult amphipod, but they could probably eat enough babies to
keep the population
down. And they do like live foods. They're one of those fish that you can't really feed. Just prepared foods. You need to give them a lot of live foods. Not a problem around here. We got plenty of that.
Oh.
So that would be fun. And I like it when Kelly sees a fish and says, "Ooh, I like that. What is that?" Kind of fun. And what else do we see that you liked?
Yellow Neocaridina shrimp.
Yeah.
They were just very yellow.
They were.
Oh, it's a gray shrimp with somewhat yellow overtones. Like, sometimes they call these colors of fish or shrimp, and there's like, oh, I can sort of see that.
But they've made
like, yellow.
They've made a lot of progress in the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years in shrimp development in terms of colors. When we moved to Hawaii, there were a few colored shrimp out there, but the really only ones that were available you could find at the time were red cherry shrimp. And now, in the same species or closely related species, there are blue ones, at least one color blue. I think there are at least two colors of blue. There are red, there are tangerine, there are yellow, there are green, there are the snowball white ones. There are so many different kinds. And there are several different lines of the red ones. And now there are the ones like the Rileys that are, they have different spots. Parts of their carapace that are colored and parts that aren't. So, anyway, some interesting things going on there. So, we might have to get some yellow shrimp someday.
And you know what else we saw?
What?
They had axolotls.
They did.
They were so cute.
They had a melanistic one and then an albino one, wasn't it?
I think so,
it was.
Yeah.
They had one of each, and they were already sold by the time we had seen them. They, had sold written on the tank.
Yeah, but they were very fun.
But
to
that's
see.
Something several of our kids have been interested in axolotls as pets, and Kelly has mentioned her interest, and I would love to do that someday. We just
I
have
just
to.
I think they're very whimsical.
The summers are too warm here for us to be able to do that now, but someday we'll have a nice, cool basement or something we can put them in, or just get a chiller. They're a lot of fun. We love to go look at them at the zoo. They have some really big adult ones at the zoo that we go see periodically. So those are fun too. Well, I think that's about all for what we've got this week.
So if you're having Thanksgiving,
have a happy one.
Have a good one.
And if you're not, have a happy week.
Yeah.
And may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.